You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Many questions have come up in recent weeks due to the government's proposal to ditch the NCEA curriculum by 2030. Most people are wondering what the future of education will look like in Aotearoa, given that NCEA has been used throughout most of New Zealand since the start of the millennium. Professor John Morgan is the head of the School of Critical Studies and Education at the University of Auckland. Morgan published an article earlier this week to look at what caused NCEA to be introduced in the first place and what the larger context of this new educational reform is. I spoke to Morgan to discuss how recent global events have impacted education and what the future of schools might look like in Aotearoa.
You've related our current situation to the educational reforms and culture changes in the 80s and 90s. Can you explain why these two timelines are comparable?
Yeah, I mean, I think that for me, the changes which took place during the 1990s around tomorrow's schools were the solution. At that point, more children left school early, less went on to university. The economy was sort of more able to accommodate people leaving early. There was sort of a less reliance on high skills and the post-industrial future and so on. And so schooling worked in the sort of period 1950 to 1975 pretty well. But as globally, the economy began to shift and places like New Zealand struggled to maintain their traditional forms of economy, but the modes of schooling, the types of schooling that we had to offer changed. And it took place in the United States, Australia, Britain a little bit earlier. New Zealand hung on, but it was in the 1980s with the fourth Labour government that suddenly the economy first, the market first approach kicked in. And the result of that was a sort of a set of changes around education. Specifically, the changes were to do with the fact that we were imagining ourselves as a small Pacific nation, battling in a global world. We had to be competitive. The Porter Report of 1990 told us this. We needed a high-skills future. We couldn't accept the long tail of educational achievement. And also there was a sense in which the forms of knowledge and curriculum which we were relying upon, which were effectively sort of the banking model where we pour information and knowledge into kids through school subjects, was being sort of challenged by educational thinking. It was much more skills-based, competence-based, rewarding people for what they could do rather than what they know. And teachers themselves were sort of empowered by that type of change because it gave them more, you know, they became pedagogical experts in teaching and learning. They had more of a role in the whole process of schooling. So I sort of see that moment of the 1980s and 1990s as pivotal to shifting us to what we have been experiencing over the last 20 years, and that's been the sort of dominant educational idea.
And now that we will see its end, do you think that the NCEA curriculum has been a success?
I think in many ways it was successful in shifting us from the old model. It loosened things up. It gave teachers more autonomy to make connections with children. It included more students. More students achieved rather than sort of being deemed educational failures at a sort of an early age. Certainly the skills, the softer skills have given a wider view of intelligence. And you know, we've had technological shifts, which means schools, in some ways, although they look very similar to what your grandmother might have gone to school in, they've changed in many ways in terms of what the content, assessment, and teaching and learning. So I think it's been successful in that. However, I think that what we're seeing now is the delayed effect of the impacts of the global financial crisis in 2008. NCEA was a qualification system which was geared towards an economy which was largely still growing at 1 or 2% per year, that it was still meeting the economic needs. Many countries have rejected this more, I suppose, loose educational assessment regime a little bit earlier. So if you think about Britain and Australia, they've taken moves to reform their examination systems much earlier than we have. And so I think we're sort of seeing the end of that moment. It works less well. There's a sense in which the whole basis of schooling has been geared towards, or some aspects of schooling have been geared towards credit farming and making sure we collect enough credits in order to meet the criteria. Whether that's going to meet the sort of the long-term challenges of New Zealand's society in the future is unclear, really. I mean, the question we always have to ask in education is, are generations getting more skilled, more intelligent, more able to face the problems that the world throws up for them. And really, and I think there is a debate to be had about whether NCEA is meeting that need. Unfortunately, I think that debate's got quite polarised between the sort of what I would call the sort of the broad centre-left, which composes most of the educational establishment in universities and research thinking, and many teachers, against what is sometimes seen as a sort of a right-wing, revanchist, back-to-the-future type sort of national government. And I don't think that's a helpful binarism to have. I think we need to move beyond that debate to think what next.
Do you think that education in New Zealand will eventually be defined by a pre-COVID and a post-COVID timeline?
That's really interesting. I mean, I think that was a question which was being posed internationally around sort of 2020 and 2021 and the return. I think what's interesting is that the debate around COVID has quickly, in many ways in education, died down. I think we see the effects of this. I think we see it in school attendance. I think we see it in generalized anxiety. But often it's not named as such because I think it's wrapped up with another set of problems to do with the precarity of the economy, economic futures, and also ongoing shifts around climate change. But I think there are some real questions which COVID is wrapped up in, which is that for most of us, we went to school where our teachers were able to say, work hard, do well, get your exams, and you will live a better life and you'll be richer and better off than your parents. And I think we're in a situation where a whole generation, we can't honestly say that to them. And I think that's a bit of a game changer for educationalists to have to consider. And we haven't worked out how to do that. So I don't know whether we'll call it pre-COVID, post-COVID. The great British historian Peter Hennessy said that's how history will define itself, the pre and post-COVID. All those other categories won't matter. But I don't know. I mean, time will tell. But certainly COVID was a shock to the system, and I think it's wrapped up with some other systemic changes.
For some context, in your article you mentioned New Zealand currently existing in a stage where the old is dying, but the new has not been born yet. Do you think these problems are a result of New Zealand struggling to accept where we are in 2025, given the amount of changes in recent years?
I think it's collectively, it's not just New Zealand. I think that there's a gradual recognition that the global financial crisis and the way in which that is impacting economics, politics and culture is being worked out in quite sort of complicated and sort of unfathomable ways in many ways. You know, add to that generative AI and the technological shifts that are occurring, the fact of war and the return of war to mainland Europe, continuing crises in the Middle East. I think there's a sense in which that we will see this period of 2010 onwards as a sort of a period when an old system was beginning to break down and something else hadn't yet replaced it. Like, so for instance, the IMF economist in 2014 announced that neoliberalism as an economic policy is dead, but I don't think many of us believe that, and it still feels as though we live in that period. But it feels as though there's sort of we have to shift to something new, but we don't quite know what it's going to be. I mean the people who the political economists who analyze this stuff tell us this is pretty common. So the breakdowns of the Great Depression lead eventually to the post-war social democratic state. The breakdown of that in the 1970s with the oil crisis, it leads eventually to the emergence of market-based economies in the late 1980s. And so we see this sort of period of 10 or 15 years where things have to settle down and a new settlement is emerging. And I think education is one part of that.
And from your perspective then, how do we get out of this interregnum period?
Oh, I think we pay very close attention to what is happening in the realms of social relations, economy, politics and culture. As educators, we try to understand that education is one part of how that is reflected in society. And we try to have a serious, I suppose, sort of cultural and political argument about where we want to go. I mean, for instance, one of the arguments now is that, you know, all of our jobs will be replaced by AI. Well, we sort of know from previous waves of technology that doesn't really happen. Doesn't mean that some jobs won't be lost, but the economy won't be shifted completely. We know that the transition to if we're able to make a transition to a sort of a green, low-carbon economy or zero-carbon economy, that's going to change the way we live, the way we think, the way we sort of do business, the way we educate it. So we have to sort of have some futures thinking. The UNESCO has produced some interesting reports on educational futures, which are go beyond the idea that simply the economy is going to be smarter, cleaner version of what we've got already, and suggest that we need to have some more intergenerational thinking about how we relate to the planet, how we relate to each other, the types of lives we want to live. Do we want to be speeding around the planet on planes, or do we want to sort of be living more local lives? These are all questions which we have to resolve in society. And education should be part of that debate, and unfortunately I don't see it being reflected in our discussions as yet. I suppose that's why I wrote the article.
And just to finish up, do you have a personal idea or forecast for what New Zealand's education might look like moving forward?
Oh, I think for the next 10 to 15 years, maybe 10 to 12 years, we will hobble on trying to reinvent our systems and trying to sort of make with what we've got. I think we will probably mimic some of the high status type qualifications that we see happening in Britain and to a certain extent in Australia. And that's because there's a great demand for these portable, high status exam-based qualifications such as IB and Cambridge. But I think there'll be another track going on, which is a conversation about alternative forms of education will begin to follow through. So we may see the sort of rejection of technological forms of education. We may see much more sort of what you would call localized and community-based forms of schooling emerging. We may not even call them schooling. So, I mean, that are things like homeschooling, sort of the sort of alternative forms of education system may evolve alongside. So I don't think there could be a great shock to the system unless we have some sort of cataclysmic climate shock. But I think we will gradually evolve different ways of thinking about the purposes and aims of education.
And that was John Morgan from the University of Auckland on why education in Aotearoa is in its current state and what the future of schools might look like.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.